The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Fall into big savings, all in the Kroger app. Get packs of juicy red, green, black, or tri-color variety seedless grapes for $3.99 each. Then get tender boneless chuck roast or steaks for $4.99 a pound, all with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Chapter 7 of 2 Years in the Forbidden City. This LibriVox recording is in the public domain. 2 Years in the Forbidden City by Princess De Ling. Read by J.C. Guan. Chapter 7. Some Incidents of the Court. My first day with Her Majesty was very tiring, as I did not know just what she wanted or how she wanted things done, and no one seemed willing to tell me. But by watching very closely, I was soon able to grasp the situation. After I had finished putting the things in the boxes, I did not know whether to take them back to the jewel room or not, or whether to wait until Her Majesty ordered me. And again I was in a quandary. I saw she was talking to my mother, so I waited a little time and finally made up my mind I would risk it and take them back, which I did. As I was returning, I met Her Majesty in the big courtyard. She had just changed her gown again, and looked much shorter, as she had also changed her shoes for ones with lower heels. This gown was made of heavy blue sky crepe, with no embroidery at all, just trimmed with pale pink ribbons, and she looked very nice in it. When Her Majesty saw me, she asked me, "Where have you been?" I told her that I had just been putting her jewels away. Then she said, "Has anyone told you to put them away as soon as I'm finished with them? I forgot to tell you this morning, although I had meant to." I said that no one had told me anything, that I was afraid to leave the eunuchs taking such valuable things here and there, that I was sure that she did not want to use them any more, so I thought it would be safer to put them away in the jewel room again. Her Majesty looked at me and said, "I can see that these girls don't tell you anything, and I am very glad to see that you have done just the right thing. That is why I thought someone must have told you what to do. Anything you want to know, you can ask me, but don't talk to these mean people here." I could see from this that there must be some jealousy among them, and decided that I was well able to find my own way, as I knew Her Majesty liked me and would help me out. Her Majesty walked along a little way, then laughed and said to me, "Don't I look more comfortable now? I am going for a long walk, and take lunch on top of the hill. There is a nice place up there, and I am sure you will like it. Come, let us go." The Emperor had gone back to his own palace, and the head eunuch had also disappeared. As we were walking along, Her Majesty was talking and smiling, as if she had never a care or a trouble in the world, or any important questions of state to settle. I thought, from what I had seen so far, that she had a very sweet disposition. She looked back and said, "Just see how many people are following us." I turned and saw the same crowd that had accompanied Her Majesty earlier in the day to the audience hall. After passing out of the large courtyard, on the west side, we came to a large, long veranda running in a zigzag fashion along the front of the lake, and it was so long that I could not see the end of it. It was very prettily made of solid carved work from one end to the other. Electric lights were hanging from the ceiling at intervals, and when they were lighted at night, made a beautiful sight. Her Majesty was a very fast walker, and we had to step lively to keep up with her. The eunuchs and the servant girls walked on the right side, and only one of the eunuchs was allowed to walk behind us, and he was the one who carried Her Majesty's yellow satin stool, which, like her dog, went everywhere she did. This stool she used to rest on when taking a walk, We walked for quite a long while, and I began to feel tired. But Her Majesty, as old as she was still walking very fast, and did not appear to be the least bit tired. She asked me if I liked the palace, and whether I would be satisfied to live with her, etc. I told her that it was a great pleasure for me to serve her, that it had been my dream for years, and now that my dream had come true, I could not help but be satisfied. We finally arrived at the place where the marble boat was kept, and I was about finished. I never saw such vitality in an old woman in my life as Her Majesty had, and it was no wonder that she had ruled the vast empire of China so successfully for so many years. This boat was magnificent, being one mass of carved work, but the inside was all spoiled. Her Majesty showed us all over the boat, and whilst we were looking at the ruin, she said, "Look at those colored glasses in the windows and these beautiful paintings. They were all spoiled by the foreign troops in 1900. I don't intend to have it repaired, as I don't want to forget the lesson I have learned, and this is a good reminder." After we had been standing there a few minutes, a eunuch who had been carrying the famous satin stool came forward, and Her Majesty sat down to rest. While we were talking, I noticed two large and very fancy-looking boats approaching us, with several smaller ones coming along behind. As they came nearer, I saw that they were also very beautifully made, and looked like floating pagodas of beautifully carved natural wood. The windows of the pagodas were hung with red gauze curtains, and all was trimmed with silk. Her Majesty said, "There are the boats. We must go over to the west side of the lake and have luncheon." Her Majesty got up and walked to the edge of the lake, two eunuchs supporting her, one at each side. She stepped into the boat, and we all followed her example. The inside of the boat was very nice, furnished with carved ebony furniture, with blue satin cushions, one with many pots of flowers on both sides of the window. There were two more cabins behind this sitting room. Her Majesty told me to go in to see those two rooms. One little room was a dressing room full of toilet articles. The other one had two couches and several small chairs for Her Majesty to rest whenever she felt tired. Her Majesty sat on her throne and ordered us to sit on the floor. The eunuchs brought in red satin cushions for us to sit upon. To sit on the floor is all right for Chinese clothes, but of course it was out of the question with Paris gowns, and I felt very uncomfortable, but did not like to say so. I wanted to change into Manchu clothes, for I knew they were comfortable and easy to work in. But having received no order from Her Majesty, I did not dare to suggest it. Her Majesty noticed how very uncomfortable we looked sitting on the floor. She said, "You can stand up if you want to, and just watch those boats following us." I put my head out of the window and noticed the young Empress and several other court ladies were in the other boat. They waved to me, and I waved back. Her Majesty laughed and said to me, "I give you this apple to throw to them." While saying this, she took one from the big plates that stood upon the center table. I tried very hard, but the apple did not reach the other boat, but went to the bottom of the lake. Her Majesty laughed and told me to try again, but I failed. Finally, she took one and threw it herself. It went straight to the other boat and hit one of the lady's head. We all laughed quite heartily. Then I began to enjoy myself. There were several open boats full of eunuchs, and another one of servant girls, amas, and the rest with Her Majesty's luncheon. The lake was beautiful and looked so green in the sun. I told Her Majesty that this color reminded me of the sea. She said, "You have traveled so much, and yet you have not had enough, but are still thinking of the sea. You must not go abroad any more, but stay with me. I want you to enjoy the sailing on this lake instead of the rough sea." I promised her that I would be only too happy to stay with her. I must say the truth, I did enjoy the lovely scenery, the beautiful weather, superb sunshine, with Her Majesty so kind to me, and talking to me in such a motherly way made me love her more and more every minute I was there. I was so extremely happy there that even Paris pleasures had gone out of my memory entirely. At last, we arrived at another part of the lake. This was more of a stream, very narrow, just wide enough for one boat to pass. On both sides of the bank were planted drooping willow trees that reminded me of the Chinese fairy tales I have read. This time, I saw the servant girls, amas, and also eunuchs carrying boxes, walking on both sides of the shore. Only two boats were going then, the young empress's and ours. Her Majesty said, "We will arrive at the bottom of the hill in a few minutes." When we came near the shore, I saw her yellow chair and several red chairs waiting. We landed and walked to the chairs. I watched Her Majesty get into hers and noticed this was not the same chair she used this morning. This little one was, of course, of yellow, with yellow poles, and two eunuchs carried it across their shoulders, and four eunuchs supported the poles, one on each corner of the chair. They were just going to raise her chair up, when she said, "Yu Tai Tai, Lady Yu, I give you and your daughters special favor, and give you a red chair with red cord that I have given to only a few people." The young empress looked at us, which I understood at once meant for us to kowtow to her, which we did, and waited until the empress got into hers. Then we went to search for ours. To my surprise, our own eunuchs were standing waiting beside our chairs. On the poles, I noticed that my name was written, and I asked our eunuch the reason. He said that Her Majesty gave the order the night before. It was a lovely ride going to the top of the hill. I saw Her Majesty's chair in front, and the young empress's. They looked to me quite dangerous in ascending that way. And the men at the back of the chair had to raise the poles above their heads so as to make the chair the same level in ascending. I was quite nervous, and was very much afraid that they might fall off and injure me. Our eunuchs were walking beside our chairs. I said to one of them that I was afraid the chair-bearers might slip. He told me to look back of my chair, which I did, and to my surprise they had the poles raised up also above their heads, and I did not feel it at all. He told me that these chair-bearers practice for such purposes, and that there was no danger at all. It made my heart stop beating looking back and seeing the other court ladies in their chairs way below mine, the eunuchs and servant girls walking, for fear I might fall off at any time. At last, we arrived at the top of the hill. We helped Her Majesty to alight, and followed her into the most lovely building I ever saw, the best one in the summer palace to my idea. Name of this pavilion, Qing Fo Ke. This palace had only two rooms, with windows on every side. One could see everywhere. Her Majesty used one large one to take her luncheon in, and the other as a toilet room. I noticed that wherever we went, we found Her Majesty's toilet room. Her Majesty took us around the compound and showed us the lovely flowers planted everywhere. One of the young eunuchs told me that Her Majesty's dainties were ready. That was my first day of real work. I went out and found two large yellow boxes of different kinds of candies and fruits, as I have before mentioned. I carried two plates at a time and finished in 9 times, placing them on a square table near her. She was talking to my mother, then about flowers. I noticed that although she was talking, she was watching me at the same time. I placed the plates upon the table very carefully, and already having noticed the day before what were her favorite dishes, and placed these near her. She smiled at me and said, "You have done it very nicely. And how do you know that these are my favorites and have placed them near me? Who told you?" I replied that no one had told me anything, and that I had noticed the day before what Lao Tzu Zhong liked. According to the Manchu custom, one must address a superior, or one's parents, in the third person. Her Majesty said, "I can see you use your heart in everything." In China, people say heart instead of head, and are not like the crowd I have here. They haven't the brains of a bird. She was soon busy eating, and gave me some candies, and told me to eat right there in her presence. Of course, I never forgot to thank her, for I thought I had rather thank her too much than too little. She told me, Whenever I give you small things, you need not kowtow. Just say 谢老祖宗赏, thank the old ancestor. That is enough. After a little while, she finished eating, and told me to take the dishes away. She said, Today is your day, so these things are yours. Take them out and sit down on the veranda, and enjoy yourself. You see, I could not eat all. There are lots of things left. If you like, you can tell your own eunuch to send them to your room. I placed the little dishes back in the boxes, and took them to the veranda. There, I placed them upon the table, and told the young empress to eat some. I did not know whether it was right to offer them to her or not, and thought I could not do her any harm, even if I tried. She said all right, that she would eat some. I took a piece of candy, and had just put it into my mouth, when I heard Her Majesty calling my name. I hurried in, and found her sitting at her table, ready to take her lunch. She said, What else did Madame Plancon say yesterday? Was she really pleased? Do you think they, the foreigners, really like me? I don't think so. On the contrary, I know they haven't forgotten the Boxer Rising, in Guangxu's 26th year. I don't mind owning up that I like our old ways the best, and I don't see any reason why we should adopt a foreign style. Did any of the foreign ladies ever tell you that I am a fierce-looking old woman? I was very much surprised that she should call me in and ask me such questions during her meal. She looked quite serious, and it seemed to me she was quite annoyed. I assured her that no one ever said anything about Her Majesty but nice things. The foreigners told me how nice she was, and how graceful, etc. This seemed to please her, and she smiled, and said, Of course they have to tell you that, just to make you feel happy by saying that your sovereign is perfect. But I know better. I can't worry too much, but I hate to see China in such a poor condition. Although the people around me seem to comfort me by telling that almost every nation feels very friendly towards China, I don't think that is true. I hope we will be strong some day. While she was saying this, I noticed her worried expression. I did not know what to say, but tried to comfort her by saying that that time will come, and we all are looking forward to it. I wanted to advise her on some points, but seeing that she was angry, I thought I had better not make any suggestions that day, but wait until I had another opportunity. I felt sorry for her, and would have given anything in the world to help her by telling what the general opinion of her was, so as to let her know the truth, which no one dared to tell her. Something told me to be silent. I kept thinking all the time she was talking to me, and finally made up my mind that the time was not yet ripe for me to make any suggestion. I had grown to love her very much, so I wanted to take care not to offend her. That would probably finish my ambition. I wanted to study her first thoroughly, and then try to influence her to reform China. I stood all the time while she was eating. She got up from the table and handed me her napkin. This napkin was made of a piece of silk, a yard square, woven in many colors. One corner was turned in, and a golden butterfly was fastened to it. It had a hook at the back of this butterfly, so as to hook on her collar. She said, I am sure you must be hungry. Go and tell the young empress and the rest of the people to come and eat. You can eat anything you want from these tables, so eat all you can. I was very, very hungry. Just imagine, I had been up since 5 o'clock, and had only a light breakfast, and had walked a great deal. It was almost noon when Her Majesty sat down at her table. She ate so slowly, too. While I stood there talking to her, I thought she would never finish. She ate a good meal. The young empress stood at the head of the table, and we all stood on either side. We did not like to be forward, so we stood at the other end of the table. The food was very much the same as the first day we were there. Her Majesty came out from the inner room, had just finished washing her face and hands, and had changed into another gown. This one was simple, but very pretty. It was woven with pink and grey raw silks, which gave it a changeable light whenever she moved. She came out and said, I want to see you people eat. "Why is it that you are standing at the end of the table? The best dishes are not there. All of you, come over here and eat near the young empress." So we moved from our end of the table to the other. Her Majesty stood near me and pointed to a smoked fish and wanted me to try it, as it was her favorite, and said, "Make yourselves at home. You know you have to fight your own battles here with this crowd. Of course, you can come and tell me if anyone does not treat you fair." Her Majesty then went out, saying that she would walk a bit. I noticed that some of the court ladies did not look pleased, seeing that Her Majesty paid so much attention to us. I could see they were a little jealous of me, but that did not worry me in the least. After we got through our luncheon, I followed the young empress, for it was all so new to me, and I did not know what I must do, whether to join Her Majesty or not. After seeing that they were jealous of me, I paid strict attention to everything, so as not to make any mistake in doing my work, and let them have the satisfaction of laughing at me. I would not give them the chance. I heard Her Majesty talking to the eunuchs, who looked after the garden, about some branches which ought to be cut down, saying they were lazy. So we went to her. She said to us, "You see, I have to look after everything myself. If not, my flowers would be ruined. I can't depend on them at all. I wonder what they are good for. They ought to look around every day and cut down the dead branches and leaves. They have not been punished for several days, and they are looking forward to it." She laughed and said, "I will not disappoint them, but give them all they wish to have." I thought these people must be idiots, looking forward to a whipping, and wondered who would whip them. Her Majesty turned to me and said, "Have you ever witnessed such an operation?" I told her that I had, having seen the convicts being whipped at the magistrate's yamen when I was a little girl living in Shanxi, on the Yangtze. She said, "That is nothing. The convicts are not half so wicked as these eunuchs. Of course, they deserve a heavier punishment when they are bad." Her Majesty said that I should learn to play dice with her, as she never had enough people to play with. So we went back to the same room where she had taken her lunch. A square table was in the middle of this large room, in a little throne of Her Majesty's, facing south, her favorite direction. Her Majesty sat on her throne and said to me, "I will show you how to play this game. Do you think you know enough Chinese to read this map?" I noticed a large map, the same size as the table, and laid upon it, drawn in different colors. In the center of the map was written the direction of the game. It said, "This game is called 8 Fairies Travel Across the Sea. The names are Lü Xian, Zhang Xian, Li Xian, Lan Xian, He Xian, Cao Xian, and Han Xian. These 7 were masculine fairies. He Xian was the only lady fairy." This map was the map of the Chinese Empire, and the names of the different provinces were written on the drawing. There were 8 pieces of round ivory, about 1.5 inches in diameter, and 1/4 inch thick. The names of these fairies were engraved upon them. This game could be played either by 8 people or 4 people, when each person had to take 2 fairies' places instead of 1. A porcelain bowl was placed in the center of the map to compare the point by throwing 6 dice into the bowl. For instance, 4 people play. 1 throws these 6 dice into the bowl and counts the points on them. The highest that one could get was 36, and should 36 be thrown, the fairy should go to Hangzhou to enjoy the beautiful scenery. This person threw dice for Lü Xian and had 36 points, and placed this ivory piece of Lü Xian on Hangzhou upon the map. The same person has to throw another time for another fairy, so each person throws twice if 4 people play the game, and once if played by 8. These different points count different provinces. They are counted thus: 6 dice alike, 1 pair in 6 dice, to 3 pairs. The lowest was the double, 1, 2, 3. If any unfortunate fairy got this, he should go on exile and be left out altogether. Any one of the fairies that travelled round the map to reach the imperial palace, the first, was the winner. I read this to Her Majesty. She seemed to be quite pleased, and said, "I had no idea that you could read so well. This game was my own invention, and I thought three court ladies to play. I had a very hard time teaching them. I also taught them how to read Chinese in order to play the game, but it took them so long to learn anything that I got quite discouraged before I got through with them. I am sure you know how to play it now. I was very much surprised to hear that these court ladies were as ignorant as this. I thought they must be excellent scholars, so did not dare to show my knowledge of Chinese literature. We began to play the game. Her Majesty was lucky. The two fairies held by her were way ahead of ours. One of the court ladies said to me, "You will be surprised to see that Lao Zhuzhong is always the winner." Her Majesty smiled and said to me, "You will never be able to catch my fairies." She said, "You are the first day here to play this game, and if any of your fairies beat any of mine, I will give you a nice present, so hurry up." I thought I could never get ahead of her fairies, for they were so far ahead of mine, but I tried hard. Her Majesty told me to call out for the points I wanted. I did, but it came out something so different that it amused her a great deal. I had no idea how long we were playing this game. We counted who came next, and that was one of my fairies. So Her Majesty said to me, "I was sure you could not beat me, as no one could. Seeing that yours are next to mine, I will give you the present just the same." While she was saying this, she told a servant girl to bring her some embroidered handkerchiefs. This girl brought several colored ones to her, and she asked me what color I preferred. She handed me a pink one and a pale blue one, all embroidered with purple wisteria, and said, "These two are the best, and I want you to take them." I was going to thank her by bowing to the ground, but I found that my legs could not move. I tried hard and succeeded finally, with difficulty. Her Majesty laughed very heartily at me, and said, "You see, you are not accustomed to standing up so long, and you cannot bend your knees any more." Although my legs were sore, I thought I had better not show it, but smiled and told her that it was nothing. Only my legs were a little stiff, that was all. She said, "You must go and sit on the veranda and rest a minute." I was only too glad to sit down, so I went to the veranda and found the young empress sitting there with several court ladies. The young empress said, "You must be tired standing so long. Come and sit near me." My legs were very stiff, and my back was tired. Of course, Her Majesty did not know how uncomfortable we were while she was sitting on her cozy throne. Foreign attire is out of the question for the Imperial Palace of Beijing. I had hoped that Her Majesty would tell us to change into our Manchu gowns. I noticed that she asked many questions every day about foreign costumes, and she said, "The foreign costume is not any prettier than ours, and I should say they must be quite uncomfortable round one's waist. I wouldn't be squeezed that way for anything." Although she was saying such things, she did not suggest that we should give them up, so we had to wait patiently for her orders. The young empress took her watch out of her pocket and said to me, "This game has lasted just 2 hours." I said to her that it seemed to me longer than that. While we were standing, I saw our own eunuchs bringing 4 round boxes, made of thin board, carried at each end of bamboo poles. They put them down near where we sat, and one of them brought me a cup of tea. When my mother and sister came, the same eunuch brought another 2 cups, and there were several court ladies talking with us. This eunuch did not give them any. I noticed at the other end of this long veranda there were another 2 boxes, exactly the same as these, and a big tall eunuch made tea and brought it to the young empress in a yellow porcelain cup, with a silver saucer and a silver top cover. He did not give any to the others. I was puzzled when one of the court ladies sitting next to me said, "Would you mind telling Wang, our head eunuch, to give me a cup of your tea, just to save me the trouble to go and get it from the small room at the end of this long veranda?" I gave her such a surprised look, for I did not know that this was our tea, but I thought I'd just tell Wang to bring her a cup, and find out afterwards the reason, for I would give anything in the world rather than appear ignorant before those people. While we were talking, Her Majesty came out. Before she reached the veranda, I got up and told the young empress that Her Majesty was coming. I saw her first, because I sat facing her back hall. Her Majesty said to us all, "It is almost 3 o'clock now, and I am going to rest a while. Let us leave here." We all stood in a line for her to enter her chair, and then we went to ours. It was quite a fast ride, and we got out of our chairs before arriving at the courtyard of her own palace. We walked ahead of her chair and formed into another line for her to alight. She walked to her bedroom, and we all followed. A eunuch brought her a cup of hot water, and another brought a bowl of sugar. She took her golden spoon and took 2 teaspoonfuls of sugar and put it into her cup of hot water and drank it very slowly. She said, "You know, before one goes to sleep or ever lies down, sugar water will quiet one's nerves. I always take it and find it very good indeed." She took the flowers off from her headdress, and I fixed them back in their boxes at once and placed them in the jewel room. When I came out of this jewel room, she was in bed already, and said to us, "You all go and rest a while. I don't need you now." End of chapter 7. Read by J.C. Guan. January 2009. Chapter 8 of 2 Years in the Forbidden City. This LibriVox recording is in the public domain. Recording by J.C. Guan. 2 Years in the Forbidden City by Princess De Ling. Chapter 8. The Court Ladies. We retired from her room, but I noticed that 2 of the court ladies did not come out with us. One of them said to me, "I am glad that I can rest a bit today, for I have been sitting 3 afternoons in succession." At first, I did not know what she meant. Then she said, "Oh, your turn has not come yet. We don't know whether you received the order or not. You know 2 of us must stay with Her Majesty during her afternoon siesta to watch the eunuchs and the servant girls." I thought that was the funniest thing I had ever heard of, and wondered how many people would be in her room. The young empress said, "We had better go at once and rest ourselves. Otherwise, Her Majesty will be up again before we get the chance." Of course, I had not the least idea how long she slept, so we went back to our rooms. I did not realize how tired I was until I sat down in my room. I felt finished and awfully sleepy at the same time, for I was not used to getting up at 5 o'clock. Everything was so new to me. As I sat there, my thoughts wandered to Paris, and I thought how strange it was that I used to go to bed at 5 o'clock after the dances, and here I had to get up at such a time. All the surroundings seemed new to me, seeing the eunuchs running here and there waiting on us, as if they were chambermaids. I told them that I didn't need them any more. I wanted them to go out of the room so that I could lie down a bit. They brought us tea and different kinds of candies, and asked what else we wanted. I was just going to change into a comfortable dress when the eunuch came in and informed me that, "Yau ke lai la," visitors have come, and 2 court ladies came, and another girl of about 17 came in. I had seen her that very morning when I came to the palace, busy working, but I was not introduced to her. These 2 girls said, "We have come to see you, and also to find out if you are comfortable." I thought they were kind to come and see me that way, but I did not like their faces. They introduced this mean-looking girl to me, and told me her name was Chan Shou, Graceful Long Life. She did not look as if her life would last long, being so thin and delicate. She looked sick and worn out to me. I did not know who she was. She curtsied to me, and I returned to her, in a sort of half-way. I will explain about the courtesy. To Her Majesty, the Emperor, and the young Empress, we went down and bent our knees, while we stood upright to the people of lower rank than ourselves. In this case, one must always wait while the inferior courtesies first, and bend the knees a little bit in return. This was the way I returned Chan Shou's courtesy to me. The 2 girls then said, Chan Shou's father is only a small official, so she has not much standing at the court. She is not exactly a court lady, but she is not a servant girl either. I almost laughed right out to hear such a funny statement, and wondered what she must be. I saw her sitting down with the court ladies that very morning, so of course I asked her to sit down too. These two court ladies asked me if I felt tired, and how I liked the Empress Dowager. I told them that Her Majesty was the most lovely lady I had ever seen, and that I already loved her very much, although I had only been there a few days. They looked at Chan Shou and exchanged smiles. They did that in such a peculiar way that it annoyed me. They asked, "Do you think you would like to live in this place, and how long do you intend to stay?" I said I would love to stay long, and would do my best to wait on Her Majesty and be useful to her, for she had been so kind towards us in the short time we had been there, and besides, it was my duty to serve my sovereign and country. They laughed and said, "We pity you, and are sorry for you. You must not expect any appreciation here, no matter how hard you work. If you are really going to do as you have said just now, you will be disliked by everybody." I did not know what they were talking about, or what their conversation referred to. I thought this was so strange that I had better put a stop to it, so I immediately changed the subject. I asked them who dressed their hair and who made their shoes for them, as they had asked mine. They answered my questions by saying that their maids did everything for them. Chan Shou said to these two girls, "Tell her everything about this palace, and I am sure she will change her mind when she actually sees things for herself." I didn't like this Chan Shou, and her face didn't impress me. She was a little bit of a thing, tiny head with thin lips. When she laughed, one could only hear the noise she made. No expression was on her face at all. I was just going to say something to them, so as not to give them the opportunity of gossiping, but found they were too cunning. They noticed that I tried every way to stop them, so they said, "Now let us tell you everything. No one else will know. We like you very much, and we want to give you some warning, so as to be able to protect yourself whenever you are in trouble." I told them that I would take great care to do my work, and didn't think that I would ever get into trouble. They laughed and said, "That makes no difference. Her Majesty will find fault." I could not believe these things that they said, and intended to tell them that I refused to hear such statements. But I thought I had better listen to what they had to say first, and not to offend them, for I never believed in making enemies. I then told them that it would be impossible for so sweet and kind-hearted a person like Lao Zhuzhong, the old ancestor, to find fault with such helpless girls as we were, for we were her people, and she could do anything she liked with us. They said, "You don't know, and have no idea how wicked this place is. Such torture and suffering one could not imagine. We are sure that you think you must be happy to be with the great Empress Dowager, and proud to be her court lady. Your day hasn't come yet, for you all are new to her. Yet she is extremely kind to you just now. But wait until she gets tired of you, and then see what she will do. We have had enough, and know what the court life is. Of course, you must have heard that Li Lianying, the head eunuch, rules this palace behind Lao Zhuzhong's back. We are all afraid of him. He pretends that he cannot influence Lao Zhuzhong, but we always know the result after a long conversation consulting how to punish anyone. If any of us do anything wrong, we always go to him and beg him to help us out. Then he says he has no power to influence Her Majesty, and also that he dare not tell her much, for she would scold him. We hate all the eunuchs. They are such bad people. We can see very plainly they are awfully polite to you, because they can see that you are in favor. To receive such rudeness from them constantly, as we do, is unbearable. Lao Zhuzhong is very changeable. She may like one person today. Tomorrow she hates this same person worse than poison. She has moods, and has no appreciation whatsoever. Even Zhu Zi, the young empress, Zhu Zi means mistress, that is to say, she was mistress of us all, for the Manchus were considered by the sovereign as slaves, is afraid of Li Lianyin, and has to be very nice to him. In fact, we all have to be polite to him. They talked so long that I thought they would never finish. About this time, Wang came in and brought tea for us. Suddenly, I heard people howling in the distance, so I asked Wang what was the matter. The girls were listening also, and a eunuch came flying in and told us, "Lao Fo Ye Qi La," the great Buddha wakes up. The girls got up and said we must all go to see her, so they went. I was not at all pleased with their visit, and wished they hadn't come, especially as they told me such horrible things. It made me quite sad to listen to the awful way they talked about Her Majesty. I loved her the first day I was there, and made up my mind to forget everything they had told me. I was cross also, because I didn't have time to change my clothes, and had to go up to Her Majesty at once. I went into her bedroom, and found her sitting upon the bed cross-legged, with a small table placed on the bed in front of her. She smiled, and asked, "Have you had a good rest? Did you sleep at all?" I said that I was not sleepy, and could not sleep in the daytime. She said, "When you are old like me, you will be able to sleep at any time. Just now you are young and fond of play. I think you must have been on the hills to gather flowers, or walked too much, for you look tired." I could only say, "Yes." The two court ladies, who had just been talking nonsense about Her Majesty, came in, to assist in handing her the toilet articles. I looked at them, and felt ashamed for them to face her, after having said so many disagreeable things. Her Majesty washed her face, and combed her hair, and a servant girl brought her fresh flowers of white jasmine and roses. Her Majesty stuck them in her hair, and said to me, "I am always fond of fresh flowers, better than jade and pearls. I love to see the little plants grow, and I water them myself. I have been so busy ever since you came that I haven't been able to visit my plants. Tell them to get the dinner ready, and I will take you a walk afterwards." I came out of her room and gave the eunuch the order. As usual, we brought little dainties to her. By this time, Her Majesty was dressed and was sitting in the large hall, playing solitaire with her dominoes. The eunuch laid the tables as usual, and Her Majesty stopped play and commenced to eat. She asked me, "How do you like this kind of life?" I told her that I very much enjoyed being with her. She said, "What kind of a place is this wonderful Paris I have heard so much about? Did you enjoy yourself while you were there, and do you wish to go back again? It must be hard for you people to leave China for 3 or 4 years, and I suppose you were all pleased when you received the order to come back after your father's term was finished." The only thing I could say was, "Yes," because it wouldn't be nice to tell her that I was awfully sorry to leave Paris. She said, "I think we have everything in China, only the life is different. What is dancing? Someone told me that two people hold hands and jump all over the room. If that is the case, I don't see any pleasure in it at all. Do you have to jump up and down with men? They told me that old women with white hair dance too." I explained to her about the balls given by the president, and all the private dances, and also all about the masquerade balls, etc. Her Majesty said, "I don't like this masquerade ball, because you don't know whom you are dancing with if they are wearing a mask." I explained to her how carefully the people issued their invitations, and that anyone who behaved badly could never enter into high society. Her Majesty said, "I would like to see how you jump. Can you show me a little?" I went in search of my sister, and found her busy talking to the young empress. I told her that Her Majesty wished to see how people dance, and that we must show her. The young empress and all the court ladies heard this, and all said that they also wished to see. My sister said that she had noticed a large gramophone in Her Majesty's bedroom, and that perhaps we could find some music. I thought that was a good idea, and went to ask for her gramophone. She said, "Oh, must you jump with music?" I almost laughed when she said that, and told her it was much nicer with music, as otherwise one could not keep in time. She ordered the eunuchs to have the gramophone brought to the hall, and said, "You jump while I take my dinner." We looked over a lot of records, but they were all Chinese songs. But at last we found a waltz, so we started to dance. We could see that a lot of people were looking at us, who perhaps thought that we were crazy. When we had finished, we found Her Majesty laughing at us. She said, "I could never do that. Are you not dizzy turning round and round? I suppose your legs must be very tired also. It is very pretty, and just like the girls used to do centuries ago in China. I know that it is difficult, and one ought to have any amount of grace to do it, but I don't think it would look nice to see a man dancing with a girl like that. I object to the hand around the girl's waist. I like to see the girls dance together. It would never do for China for a girl to get too close to a man. I know the foreigners don't seem to think about that at all. It shows that they are broader-minded than us. Is it true that the foreigners don't respect their parents at all? That they could beat their parents and drive them out of the house?" I told her that it was not so, and that someone had given her wrong ideas about foreigners. Then she said, "I know that perhaps sometimes one among the commonest class do that, and that people are apt to take it wrong, and conclude that all foreigners treat their parents that way. Now I see just the same thing done by the common people in China." I wondered who had told her such nonsense and made her believe it. After we had taken our dinner, it was just 5:30, and Her Majesty said she would take a walk along the long veranda, so we followed her. She showed me her flowers, and said that she had planted them herself. Whenever Her Majesty went anywhere, there was always a lot of attendants following her, exactly the same as when she went to the morning audiences. When we reached the end of this long veranda, which took us a quarter of an hour to walk, Her Majesty ordered her stool to be brought into one of the summer houses. These summer houses were built of nothing but bamboo, all the furniture being made of different shaped bamboo. Her Majesty sat down, and one of the eunuchs brought tea and honeysuckle flowers. She ordered the eunuchs to give us tea also. Her Majesty said, "This is my simple way of enjoying life. I love to see the country scenery. There are a great many pretty places which I will show you, and I am sure that after you have seen them, you will not like foreign countries any more. There is no scenery in the world which can beat the Chinese." Some returned ministers from abroad said to me that the trees and mountains in foreign countries looked ugly and savage. Is that true? I concluded right away that someone had wished to please her by saying things about foreigners, so I told her that I had been in almost every country, and had found lovely scenery, but of course it was different from China. While we were talking, Her Majesty said that she felt chilly, and asked, "Are you cold? You see, you have your own eunuchs. They are all standing around, and have nothing to do. Next time, tell them to carry your wraps along with you. I think that foreign clothes must be quite uncomfortable, either too warm or too cold. I don't see how you can eat, having your waist squeezed that way." Her Majesty got up, and we all went on walking slowly towards her own palace. She sat down on her favorite little throne in the hall, and started to play solitaire. We came out on the veranda, and the young empress said to us, "You must be tired, for I know you are not used to doing such hard work all day long without stopping. You had better wear Manchu clothes, because they are comfortable and easy to work in. Look at your long train. You have to take it up in your hands while walking." I told her that I would be only too pleased to change the clothes, but that not having received an order from Her Majesty, I could not make any suggestions. The young Empress said, "No, don't ask anything, and I am sure Her Majesty will tell you to change by and by. Just now she wishes to see your Paris gowns, because she wants to know how foreign ladies dress on different occasions. She thought that some of the ladies came to the garden party dressed in woolen clothes. We thought that foreign ladies were not so extravagant as we are until we met Madame Plancon the other day. Do you remember what Her Majesty said to you? That Madame Plancon was so different from many ladies she had met, and also dressed differently. It was a chiffon dress, with hand paintings, which Madame Plancon wore, which pleased Her Majesty very much. While I was talking with the young Empress, all the electric lights turned up, so I went to Her Majesty to see if she needed anything. She said, 'Let us play a game of dice before I go to bed.' We began to play the same thing as we had done in the afternoon. Her Majesty won another game. This time it took only an hour to finish the game. Her Majesty said to me, 'Why can't you win once?' I knew she wanted to tease, so I said that my luck was bad. She laughed and said, 'Tomorrow you try to put your stocking on, wrong side out. That is a sure sign of winning.' I told her that I would, and I knew that pleased her. During the short time I was there, I kept studying her most of the while. I would see nothing would make her happier than for me to obey her orders. Her Majesty said that she felt tired, and that we must bring her milk. She said to me, 'I want you to burn incense sticks and bow to the ground every night to the Buddha in the next room before I go to bed. I hope you are not a Christian, for if you are, I can never feel as if you are mine at all. Do tell me that you are not.' I did not expect that question at all, and I must say that it was a very difficult question to answer. For my own protection, I had to say that I had nothing to do with the Christians. I felt guilty at having deceived her that way, but it was absolutely necessary, and there was no other way out of it. I knew that I had to answer her question at once, because it would never do for her to see any hesitation, which would arouse her suspicions. Although my face showed nothing, my heart stopped beating for a while. I felt ashamed to have fooled her. The earliest training I had was never to be ashamed to tell the truth. When Her Majesty heard me say that I was not a Christian, she smiled and said, 'I admire you. Although you have had much to do with foreigners, yet you did not adopt their religion. On the contrary, you still keep to your own. Be strong and keep it as long as you live. You have no idea how glad I am now, for I suspected you must believe in the foreign god. Even if you don't want to, they can make you believe it. Now I am ready for bed.' We helped her to undress, and I, as usual, put away her jewels, and noticed she wore only one pair of jade bracelets to sleep. She changed into her bedclothes and lay down between the silk covers and said to us, 'You can go now.' We curtsied to her and withdrew from her bedroom. Out in the hall, there was on the cold stone floor 6 eunuchs. They were the watchmen and must not sleep at all during the night. In her bedroom were 2 eunuchs, 2 servant girls, 2 old women servants, and sometimes 2 court ladies. These people also must not sleep. The 2 girls massaged her legs every night, and the 2 women were there to watch the girls, the 2 eunuchs to watch the 2 old women, and the 2 court ladies to watch them all, in case they did any mischief. They all took turns, and that was the reason why sometimes 2 court ladies must sit overnight when it happened that the eunuchs were not reliable. Her Majesty trusted the court ladies the most. I was never more surprised in my life than when one of these 6 eunuchs told me in the hall, for I had asked what they were all doing there. Later on, one of the court ladies said to me that it was customary for them to take turns to attend at Her Majesty's bedchamber in the morning to wake her up, and that I should take my turn the next morning, and my sister the following morning. While saying this, she smiled in a most peculiar way. I did not understand at the time, but found out later. I asked her what I should do to wake Her Majesty, and she said, "There is no particular way. You will have to use your own judgment. But be careful not to make her angry." It was my turn this morning. I knew that she was very tired, having had a very trying time the day before, so I had to make a little more noise than usual when waking her up. She was very angry and scolded me dreadfully when she arose, as it was rather late. This very often happens when Her Majesty gets up late, as she always says that we do not make enough noise to wake her. However, I don't think she will do this to you just now, as you are new here. But wait until you have been here a few months. What this court lady said to me worried me quite considerably. But from what I had seen of Her Majesty so far, I could not believe that she could be angry with anyone who was doing her duty properly. End of Chapter 8. Read by J.C. Guan, January 2009. Chapter 9 of 2 Years in the Forbidden City. This LibriVox recording is in the public domain. Recording by J.C. Guan. 2 Years in the Forbidden City by Princess De Ling. Chapter 9. The Emperor Guangxu. The next day, I arose earlier than usual and dressed in a great hurry, as I feared I might be late. When I got to Her Majesty's palace, there were a few court ladies there sitting on the veranda. They smiled and asked me to sit down with them, as it was still too early, being only 5 o'clock. I had been told to wake Her Majesty at 5:30. The young empress came up a few minutes later, and we all curtsied and wished her good morning. After talking with us a few minutes, she asked if Her Majesty was awake, and which one of us was on duty that day. When I informed her that it was my turn, she immediately ordered me to go to Her Majesty's room at once. I went very quietly, and found some servant girls standing about and one court lady who was sitting on the floor. She had been on duty all night. When she saw me, she got up and whispered to me that now that I had come, she would go and change her clothes and brush up a bit, and for me not to leave the room until Her Majesty was awake. After this court lady had gone, I went near to the bed and said, "Lao Zhuzhong, it's 5:30. She was sleeping with her face toward the wall, and without looking to see who had called her, she said, "Go away and leave me alone. I did not tell you to call me at 5:30. Call me at 6. And immediately went off to sleep again. I waited until 6 and called her again. She woke and said, "This is dreadful. What a nuisance you are." After she had said this, she looked around and saw me standing by the bed. "Oh, it is you, is it? Who told you to come and wake me?" I replied, "One of the court ladies told me that it was my turn to be on duty in Lao Zhuzhong's bedchamber." "That is funny. How dare they give orders without receiving instructions from me first? They know that this part of their duty is not very pleasant, and have put it off on you because they know you are new here." I made no reply to this. I got along as best I could that day and found it no easy matter, as Her Majesty was very exacting in everything. However, the next time I managed to divert her attention to things new or interesting in order to take her mind off of what she was doing, and in this way had much less trouble getting her out of bed. My reader can't imagine how very glad we were to get back to our rooms, and it was just 10:30 p.m. I was very tired and sleepy, so I undressed and went to bed at once. I think that as soon as my head touched the pillow, I was asleep. The following day there was the same thing, the usual audience in the morning, of course busy all the time, which went on for 15 days before I realized it. I began to take great interest in the court life, and liked it better every day. Her Majesty was very sweet and kind to us all, and took us to see the different places in the summer palace. We went to see Her Majesty's farm, situated on the west side of the lake, and had to cross over a high bridge to get there. This bridge is called Yu Dai Qiao, Jade Girdle Bridge. Her Majesty often took us under this bridge in a boat, or we walked round on the border. She seemed very fond of sitting on the top of this bridge on her stool and taking her tea. In fact, this was one of her favorite places. She used to go and see her farm once every 4 or 5 days, and it always pleased her if she could take some vegetable and rice or corn from her own farm. She cooked these things herself in one of the courtyards. I thought that was good fun, and also turned up my sleeves to help her cook. We brought fresh eggs also from the farm, and Her Majesty taught us how to cook them with black tea leaves. Her Majesty's cooking stoves were very peculiar. They were made of brass, lined with bricks. They could be moved anywhere, for they had no chimneys. Her Majesty told me to boil the eggs first until they were hard, and to crack them, but to keep the shells on, and add 1/2 cup of black tea, salt, and spices. Her Majesty said, "I like the country life. It seems more natural than the court life. I am always glad to see young people having fun, and not such grand dames when we are by ourselves. Although I am not young any more, I am still very fond of play." Her Majesty would taste first what we had been cooking, and would give us all to taste. She said, "Do you not think this food has more flavor than that prepared by the cooks?" We all said it was fine. So we spent the long days at the court having good fun. I saw Emperor Guangxu every morning, and whenever I had the time, he would always ask some words in English. I was surprised to learn that he knew quite a bit of spelling, too. I found him extremely interesting. He had very expressive eyes. He was entirely a different person when he was alone with us. He would laugh and tease, but as soon as he was in the presence of Her Majesty, he would look serious, and as if he were worried to death. At times he looked stupid. I was told by a great many people who were presented to him at the different audiences that he did not look intelligent, and that he would never talk. I knew better, for I used to see him every day. I was at the court long enough to study him, and found him to be one of the most intelligent men in China. He was a capital diplomat, and had wonderful brains. Only, he had no opportunities. Now, a great many people have asked me the same question, if our Emperor Guangxu had any courage or brains. Of course, outsiders have no idea how strict the law is, and the way we have to respect our parents. He was compelled to give up a great many things on account of the law. I have had many long talks with him, and found him a wise man, with any amount of patience. His life was not a happy one. Ever since his childhood, his health was poor. He told me that he never had studied literature very much, but it came natural to him. He was a born musician, and could play any instrument without studying. He loved the piano, and was always after me to teach him. There were several beautiful grand pianos at the audience hall. He had very good taste for foreign music, too. I taught him some easy waltzes, and he kept the time beautifully. I found him a good companion and a good friend, and he confided in me and told me his troubles and sorrows. We talked a great deal about Western civilization, and I was surprised to learn he was so well informed in everything. He used to tell me, time after time, his ambitions for the welfare of his country. He loved his people, and would have done anything to help them whenever there was famine or flood. I noticed that he felt for them. I know that some eunuchs gave false reports about his character, that he was cruel, etc. I had heard the same thing before I went to the palace. He was kind to the eunuchs, but there was always that distinction between the master and the servants. He would never allow the eunuchs to speak to him unless they were spoken to, and never listened to any kind of gossip. I lived there long enough, and I know just what kind of cruel people those eunuchs were. They had no respect for their master. They came from the lowest class of people from the country, had no education, no morals, no feeling for anything, not even between themselves. The outside world has heard so many things against His Majesty the Emperor Guangxu's character, but I assure my readers that these things were told by the eunuchs to their families, and of course they always stretched it out as far as possible, in order to make the conversation interesting. The majority of the people living in Beijing get all kinds of information through them. I have witnessed the same thing many a time during my stay at the palace. One day, during the time of Her Majesty's afternoon rest, we heard a dreadful noise. It sounded just like the firing off of firecrackers. Such a noise was quite unusual in the palace, for such things are not allowed to be brought into the palace grounds. Of course, Her Majesty woke up. In a few seconds' time, everyone became excited and were running to and fro, as if the building was on fire. Her Majesty was giving orders and telling the eunuchs to be quiet, but no one listened to her, and kept yelling and running around like crazy people, all talking at the same time. Her Majesty was furious, and ordered us to bring the yellow bag to her. I must explain about this bag. It was made of ordinary yellow cloth, and contained bamboo sticks of all sorts and sizes, and are made to beat the eunuchs, servant girls, and old women servants with. This bag was carried everywhere Her Majesty went, to be handy in case of emergency. Every one of us knew where this bag was kept. We took all the sticks from the bag, and Her Majesty ordered us to go to the courtyard and beat the eunuchs. It was such a funny sight to see all the court ladies and servant girls, each with a stick, trying to separate the excited crowd. On my part, I thought I was having good fun, so I laughed, and found the rest were laughing too. Her Majesty was standing on the veranda, watching us, but she was too far away to see well, and with all that noise, we knew she could not hear us laughing. We tried our best to separate the crowd, but were laughing so much we did not have enough strength to hurt any of them. All of a sudden, all the eunuchs became quiet and stopped talking, for one of them saw the head eunuch, Li Lianyin, followed by all his attendants coming towards them. Every one of them became frightened and stood there like statues. We stopped laughing too, and turned back each with a stick in our hand, walking toward Her Majesty. Li Lianyin was having a nap too, and had heard the noise, and had come to inquire what the trouble was, and to report it to Her Majesty. It seemed one of the young eunuchs caught a crow. The eunuchs hated crows, as they are considered an unlucky bird. The people in China called eunuchs crows because they were very disagreeable. That was the reason why the eunuchs hated them so. They always set traps to catch them, and then tied a huge firecracker to their legs, set fire to the cracker, and then set the unfortunate birds free. Naturally, the poor birds would be glad to fly away, and by the time the powder exploded, would be high up in the air, and the poor bird would be blown to pieces. It seems this was not the first time the eunuchs had played this cruel trick. I was told it always delighted them so much to see blood and torture. They always invited others to drink some wine with them, to celebrate an occasion such as this. This cruel deed was always done outside the wall of the audience hall, but that day the crow flew towards Her Majesty's own palace while she was sleeping, and the powder exploded while the bird was passing the courtyard. After the head eunuch had told Her Majesty what had happened, she was very angry, and ordered that this young eunuch be brought in and receive punishment in her presence. I noticed one of the head eunuch's attendants push the culprit out from the crowd. The head eunuch immediately gave orders to lay this man on the ground, and two eunuchs stood on each side of him and beat him on his legs with two heavy bamboo sticks, one at a time. The victim never uttered a word while this was going on. The head eunuch counted until this man had received 100 blows. Then he gave orders to stop. Then he knelt in front of Her Majesty, waiting for her orders, and at the same time kowtowed on the ground until his head made a noise on the stone steps, asking to be punished for his carelessness and neglect of duty. Her Majesty said that it was not his fault, and ordered him to take the offender away. During this time, the offender was still on the ground, and did not dare to move. Two eunuchs each took hold of a foot and dragged him out of the courtyard. We were all afraid even to breathe aloud, for fear Her Majesty would say we were pretending to be frightened at witnessing this punishment. At the same time, when it was over, we would go and gossip about how cruel she was. No one was surprised at what had happened, as we were accustomed to seeing it almost every day, and were quite used to it. I used to pity them, but I changed my mind very soon after I had arrived. The first person I saw punished was a servant girl. She had made a mistake about Her Majesty's socks, and had brought two which were not mates. Her Majesty, finding that out, ordered another servant girl to slap her face 10 times on each cheek. This girl did not slap hard enough, so Her Majesty said they were all good friends and would not obey her orders, so they told the one who had been slapped to slap the other. I thought that was too funny for anything, and wanted to laugh the worst way, but of course did not dare. That night I asked those two girls how they felt slapping each other that way. The reason why I asked them was because they were laughing and joking, as usual, immediately they were out of Her Majesty's bedchamber. They told me that was nothing, that they were quite used to it, and never bothered themselves about such small things. I, in turn, soon became used to it, and was as callous as they were. Now, regarding the servant girls, they are a much better class of people than the eunuchs. They are the daughters of Manchu soldiers, and must stay 10 years at the palace to wait upon Her Majesty, and then they are free to marry. One got married after my first month at the court. Her Majesty gave her a small sum of money, 500 taels. This girl was so attached to Her Majesty that it was very hard for her to leave the court. She was an extremely clever girl. Her name was Qiu Yun, Autumn's Cloud. Her Majesty named her that because she was so very delicate-looking and slight. I liked her very much during the short time that we were together. She told me not to listen to anyone's gossip at the court, also that Her Majesty had told her she was very fond of me. On the 22nd day of the third moon, she left the palace, and we were all sorry to lose her. Her Majesty did not realize how much she missed her until after she had gone. For a few days we had nothing but troubles. It seemed as if everything went wrong. Her Majesty was not at all satisfied without Qiu Yun. The rest of the servant girls were scared and tried their best to please Her Majesty, but they had not the ability, so we had to help and do a part of their work so as not to make Her Majesty nervous. Unfortunately, she stopped us and said, "You have enough to do of your own work, and I do not want you to help the servants. You don't please me a bit that way." She could see that I was not accustomed to her ways, for she had spoken severely, so she smiled and said to me, "I know you are good to help them so as not to make me angry, but these servants are very cunning. It isn't that they cannot do their work. They know very well that I always select the clever ones to wait on me in my bedroom, and they don't like that, so they pretend to be stupid and make me angry so that I will send them to do the common work. The eunuchs are worse. They are all afraid to take Qiu Yun's place. Now I have found them out, and I will only keep the stupid ones to wait on me from now." I almost laughed when I noticed that they all looked serious for a moment. I thought these people must be really stupid and not lazy, but I had dealings with them every day and found them out all right. The eunuchs don't seem to have any brains at all. They are such queer people and have no feelings. They have the same mood all day long. I should say they are in a cruel mood. Whenever Her Majesty gave an order, they always said, "Sure, yes," and as soon as they got out to our waiting room, they would say to each other, "What was the order? I have forgotten all about it." Then they used to come to one of us who had happened to be present when the order was given. "Please tell us what the order was. I did not listen while Her Majesty was talking." We used to laugh and make fun of them. We knew they were afraid to ask Her Majesty, and of course we had to tell them. One of the eunuch writers had to keep writing down the orders that had been given during the day, for Her Majesty wanted to keep records of everything. There were 20 eunuchs who were educated, and they were excellent scholars. These had to answer any questions which Her Majesty happened to ask them about Chinese literature, while she had a good knowledge of it herself. I noticed that it pleased her a great deal if anyone could not answer a question, or knew less than she did. She took delight at laughing at them. Her Majesty was also very fond of teasing. She knew that the court ladies did not know very much about literature, so she used to try it on us. We had to say something, whether it was appropriate to her questions or not, and that would make her laugh. I was told that Her Majesty did not like anyone to be too clever, and yet she could not bear stupid people, so I was rather nervous, and did not know how to act for the first 3 weeks I was there. But it did not take me very long to study her. She certainly admired clever girls, but she did not like those who would show their cleverness too much. How I won her heart was this way. Whenever I was with her, I used to fix my whole attention on her, and watched her very closely, not staring, for she hated that, and always carried out her orders properly. I noticed another thing, and that was that whenever she wanted anything to be brought to her, such as cigarettes, handkerchiefs, etc., she would only look at the article, and then look at anyone who happened to be there at the time. There was always a table in the room on which everything she needed for the day was placed. I got so used to her habits that after a short time I knew just what she wanted by looking at her eyes, and I was very seldom mistaken. This pleased her a great deal. She was strong-minded, and would always act the way she thought was right, and had perfect confidence in herself. At times I have seen her looking very sad. She had strong emotions, but her will was stronger. She could control herself beautifully, and yet she liked people to sympathize with her, only by actions, not by words, for she did not like anyone to know her thoughts. I am sure my readers will think how hard it was to be the court lady of Her Majesty, the Empress Dowager of China. But on the contrary, I enjoyed myself very much, as she was so interesting, and I found that she was not at all difficult to please. The first day of the fourth moon Her Majesty was worried over the lack of rain. She prayed every day after the audience for 10 days, without any result. Every one of us kept very quiet. Her Majesty did not even give any orders that day, and spoke to no one. I noticed that the eunuchs were scared, so we went without our luncheon. I worked so hard that morning, and was so hungry. In fact, all the court ladies were. I felt sorry for Her Majesty. Finally, she told me I could go, as she wanted to rest a while. So we came back to our own quarters. I questioned our own eunuch Wang as to why Her Majesty was worrying about rain, for we were having lovely weather then, day after day. He told me that Lao Fuoye, old Buddha, was worried for the poor farmers, as all their crops were dead without rain for so long. Wang also reminded me that it had not rained once since I came to live at the palace. I did not realize that it was so long as 2 months and 7 days, and on the other hand, it seemed to me longer than that, for the life was very nice and pleasant, and Her Majesty was very kind to me, as if she had known me for years already. Her Majesty took very little food at dinner that night. There was not a sound anywhere, and everyone kept quiet. The young Empress told us to eat as fast as we could, which puzzled me. When we came back to our waiting room, the young Empress said to me that Her Majesty was very much worried for the poor farmers, and that she would pray for rain and stop eating meat for 2 or 3 days. That same night, before Her Majesty retired, she gave orders that no pigs were to be slaughtered within the gates of Beijing. The reason of this was that by sacrificing ourselves by not eating meat, the gods would have pity on us and send rain. She also gave orders that everyone should bathe the body and wash out the mouth, in order that we might be cleansed from all impurities and be ready to fast and pray to the gods. Also, that the emperor should go to the temple inside the forbidden city to perform a ceremony of sacrifice called Qingtan. He was not to eat meat or hold converse with anyone, and to pray to the gods to be merciful and send rain to the poor farmers. His Majesty, the Emperor Guangxu, wore a piece of jade tablet about 3 inches square, engraved Zhai Qie, the meaning being just like Qingtan, not to eat meat but to pray 3 times a day, both in Manchu and Chinese, and all the eunuchs who went with the emperor wore the same kind of tablets. The idea was that this jade tablet was to remind one to be serious in performing the ceremonies. The next morning, Her Majesty got up very early and ordered me not to bring any jewels for her. She dressed herself in great haste. Her breakfast was very simple that day, just milk and steamed bread. Our own breakfast was cabbage and rice, cooked together, with a little salt. It was tasteless. Her Majesty did not talk to us at all, except when giving orders, and so, of course, we kept silent. Her Majesty wore a pale grey gown, made very plain, with no embroidery or trimmings of any kind. She wore grey shoes to match, not to mention her Greek handkerchief. We followed her into the hall, where a eunuch knelt with a large branch of willow tree. Her Majesty picked a little bunch of leaves and stuck it on her head. The young empress did the same, and told us to follow her example. Emperor Guangxu took a branch and stuck it on his hat. After that, Her Majesty ordered the eunuchs and servant girls to do the same. It was a funny sight, and everyone did look queer with a bunch of leaves on the head. The head eunuch came and knelt in front of Her Majesty, and said that everything was prepared for the ceremony in the little pavilion in front of her own palace. She told us that she preferred to walk, as she was going to pray. It took only a few minutes to cross the courtyard. When we arrived at this pavilion, I noticed a large square table was placed in the center of the room. A few large sheets of yellow paper and a jade slab, containing some vermilion powder instead of ink, with 2 little brushes to write with. At each side of the table stood a pair of large porcelain vases, with 2 large branches of willow. Of course, no one was allowed to speak, but I was curious and wanted to find out why everyone had to wear the willow leaves on the head. Her Majesty's yellow satin cushion was placed in front of this table. She stood there and took a piece of sandalwood and placed it in the incense burner filled with live charcoal. The young empress whispered to me to go over and help Her Majesty to burn them. I placed several pieces in until she told me that was enough. Then Her Majesty knelt on her cushion. The young empress knelt behind her, and we all knelt in a row behind the young empress, and commenced to pray. The young empress taught us that very morning how to say the prayer. We worship the heavens, and beg all the Buddhas to take pity on us, and save the poor farmers from starving. We are willing to sacrifice for them. Pray heaven send us rain. We repeated the same prayer 3 times, and bowed 3 times, 9 times in all. After that, Her Majesty went to her usual morning audience. It was much earlier than usual that morning, for the court was returning to the Forbidden City at noon. His Majesty, the Emperor Guangxu, was to pray at the Forbidden City, and Her Majesty always wanted to accompany him whenever he went. It was 9 o'clock in the morning when the audience was over. She ordered me not to bring any jewels for her to the Forbidden City this time, for she would not need them at all. I went to the jewel room and locked everything up, and placed the keys in a yellow envelope, sealed it, and placed the envelope among the others, and gave them to a eunuch who takes care of these things. We packed all her favorite things. Her gowns were the most important things to pack. She had so many, and it was impossible to take all. I noticed that the court lady, who was looking after her gowns, was the busiest amongst us. She had to select gowns enough to last 4 or 5 days. She told me that she had selected about 50 different ones. I told her that Lao Zhuzhong might stay at the Forbidden City 4 or 5 days, and that she would not need so many gowns. She said it was safer to bring many, for one was not sure what would be Her Majesty's idea for the day. Packing at the court was very simple. Eunuchs brought many yellow trays, which are made of wood, painted yellow, about 5 feet by 4 feet, and 1 foot deep. We placed a large yellow silk scarf in the tray, then the gowns, and covered them with a thick yellow cloth. Everything was packed the same way. It took us about 2 hours to pack 56 trays. These things always started off first, carried by the eunuchs. His Majesty, the Emperor Guangxu, the young empress, and all the court ladies had to kneel on the ground for Her Majesty's sedan chair to pass the palace gate. Then we went in search of our own chairs. The procession, as usual, was pretty. Soldiers marching in front of her chair, 4 young princes riding on horseback on each side of her, and from 40 to 50 eunuchs also on horseback behind her, all dressed in their official robes. The Emperor's chair and the young Empress's chair were of the same color as Her Majesty's. The secondary wife of the Emperor had a deep yellow chair. The chairs of the court ladies were red, and were carried by 4 chair-bearers instead of 8, like their Majesties. Our own eunuchs also rode on horseback, behind us. We rode a long time, it seemed to me, before I noticed the Emperor's chair begin to descend from the stone-paved road, and we all followed him. I could see that Her Majesty's chair was still going straight on, and we took a nearer route to reach Wan Shou Si, the Long Life Temple, to await Her Majesty's arrival. We alighted from our chairs and started at once to prepare Her Majesty's tea and her little dishes. I went to help her to alight, and supported her right arm to mount the steps. Her Majesty sat on her throne, and we placed a table in front of her, and my sister brought her tea. The custom was that if she went anywhere, or during the festivals, we must bring to her everything, instead of the eunuchs. We placed all the dainties in front of her, and then went to rest. Her Majesty always stopped at this temple on the way from the Summer Palace to the Forbidden City. End of Chapter 9. Read by J.C. Guan. January 2009.
Fall into big savings all in the Kroger app. Get packs of juicy red, green, black, or tri-color variety seedless grapes for $3.99 each, then get tender boneless chuck roast or steaks for $4.99 a pound, all with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.